Frank, thanks for coming on my show. I really love talking about people that were in some sort of real estate sales business, which I know you were doing commercial real estate back at the beginning of the recession, or right in the middle of it.
That's right.
And yeah, your journey is taking you to multifamily and syndications, and really incredible story. So I'm excited to have you on to tell it. So
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I am also at home. I have a couple of kids that are completely unpredictable. So one of them might pop up for some reason asking me for something. So
Yeah,
this is the
so
life we live.
it is a life. I was in the office. I guess the Wi-Fi wasn't going, so I have the cleaning lady finishing up. My wife is running back into it's. It is what it is.
It
It
is,
is what it
man.
is. It
It's the
is
world
what
we
it
live in
is,
now.
brother. So it goes.
So Frank, tell me, man. It's like, just start from the beginning, man. I really want to hear your story. You know, I know you had some tragedy that pushed you into real estate and everything. So, yeah,
Yeah,
man,
for
I
sure.
want to hear about it.
Yeah, for sure. First off, thanks for having me. Super excited to be here, man. Yeah, I'll go back to I grew up in initially in the Bronx, New York. I grew up in the Bronx, so my father was a medical doctor. He was an ophthalmologist, and he always had a passion for real estate. And he always wanted to do his thing with real estate while pursuing the medical field. So he went to medical school in Guadalajara, and when he came back, he started pursuing acquiring properties for medical facilities in the Bronx, in our community. He wanted to give back to the community. So what happened was in 1985, his first deal, he was 32 years old. He was disputing over a commercial property in Throgs Neck of the Bronx, and it went to court. Ultimately, he won. He got the property. However, rather than just let it be, he had to go rub it in the guy's face. And this was the day after my sixth birthday. I was waiting at a pizza shop for him with my brother because he had worked the night before in a hospital. And we were waiting for him to come get us so we could celebrate my birthday. And it turns out he went to go rub it in the guy's face. They got into an argument. And as my dad was walking back to his car, the guy ran up behind him with a gun and shot him in the back of the head. And he died immediately, which, needless to say, was a shock. It was something, man. I mean, put that all into perspective. My father was the provider for the family. He was a doctor. He was ambitious. He was building real estate. Now my mother, three kids, no husband, no source of income. His life insurance plan, he didn't miss, he filled out, he misfilled some forms. They were sent back when he died. She had zero money from that as well. But this is something that really blew my mind was my mother with a high school graduation and three kids on her own. One in there, and she ran those properties, and she paid off every single investor that invested in that property, and she grew those properties threefold. Now, needless to say, she wasn't necessarily real estate savvy. She never put money back into the properties. She was always taking money out, and it got to a point where these things became way over leveraged. So that's going to take us basically through the 80s and 90s, and in 2008. We were about to lose the property. Now, at that point, I was a waiter at a restaurant in New York City. I was pursuing other things, and lo and behold, me and my sister had to get involved in the real estate. We went to these properties, and I mean, we had squatters in there. There were families living in the basements of these facilities, medical facilities, and we had to sell the properties. We had to sell the properties. We had to get in there, and we learned firsthand, essentially, what an over-leveraged property looks like, not only an over-leveraged property, but a property that has never, no one has put money back into. And I didn't know what I was doing, man. I was 20 something years old. I was living the life of a guy and a bartender in New York City. I mean, you can kind of fill in the blanks. I'm going to banks to get loans. They're like, give me your financial statement. I'm like, financial statement? I'm like, what are you talking about, man? I'm barely making rent here. So needless to say, it was a journey. It was really a journey. But me and my sister, we rolled up our sleeves. And this is in 2009. Now, it was horrible. I mean, the market in New York City was horrible. Across the country was horrible. We were able to unload those properties. And we had to really do everything by ourselves. We rolled those over into two multifamily properties, one in Brooklyn and one in Harlem. Worked the properties. I mean, I was going in there. I was kicking out tenants, collecting rents, meeting plumbers, then going to run and do my W-2, which at the time was a restaurant. And my sister was at the same time trying to be a lawyer. So we really learned the hard way. And New York is unique, not unique, but it's very difficult. It falls under those parameters, tons of regulations, tons of regulations. And we learned that we had to do, you know, rent control regulations, rent RPIEs, so on and so forth. So needless to say, man, it was a learning process. We kind of took a tragedy, and we like to say we made it into a triumph. Because, you know, I learned something about my mother, which was integrity. I mean, she did the best she could with what she had. She paid off her investors. And then it just became too much for her. I mean, I guess the idea of life without a husband and three kids and the stresses of that. I mean, you have to be sentimental to that. And, yeah, the reality is it was tough to get involved, because initially she kind of guarded us from getting into real estate, because where the buildings were was where the scene of the crime was. That's where he was murdered, right there at those buildings. So she didn't really want us to go there. So it was kind of heavy, but we took it, you know, we took lemons and we kind of made lemonade. And that we've been, you know, fortunate enough that now we've expanded our portfolio. And it's been a slow process, probably slower than I'd like, but it's been a learning process nonetheless.
Wow, where did it went? That's a really powerful story, man. You know, I'm sorry to hear about your dad. That's incredible hardship, man. At what point did you learn, you know, like what was the impetus to where you were like, you saw the need to change the leverage and make improvements to the property? You know, I imagine that's around the point that you started seeking to expand your portfolio when you had to do those things. So, you know, what was that? And how much leverage did you have? Like, what do you, you know, were the properties starting to lose money? Like, were they really over leveraged to the point where they were negative cash flowing, or did you catch it soon enough and make some changes so that you could, you know, expand?
Well, yeah. So the properties were definitely negative cash flow by the time. We had three buildings. Two of them were negative cash flow. One was not. We were fortunate enough to get in there. We found a local investor, and we did walk away with a good amount of cash. I mean, there was no notes on these buildings. You know, they were all bought cash. So it was three. It was about 150 feet of frontage in prime Bronx real estate. So fortunately, we were able to roll that over into mixed use. Now, to answer your question, how did we know? I mean, I think in life, not just in real estate, you have to surround yourself with the right people. It just so happened while I was trying to be a restaurant, I was pursuing my restaurant career. I was also trying to sell commercial real estate in the toughest market in New York City during the day. And the principal of there, he kind of took me under his wing, and he was kind of guiding us. He's like, this is what you have to do. You have to do X, Y, and Z. Let's find something, you know, undervalued asset. Let's get these rents up, get the tenants out, so on and so forth, which, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel here. We all kind of know how that works, kind of find an undervalued property and working it. But I think the lesson is if you don't know, you have to ask, and you have to know how to source, or at least put yourself in situations where you're surrounded by people who do know, or at least like-minded people, because together you can achieve more. So we did that. We sought out other people who were doing things similar to what we wanted to achieve, and we learned that way.
How did you get yourself out of that pickle of those negative cash flow properties?
Well, I mean, so we sold those three buildings at that time for $3 million, which, you know, in hindsight, we probably could have got a bit more for that. That's what we had to do. I mean, my mom was bleeding money. She was hemorrhaging money. I mean, there was no notes, so they were just, you know, she was paying her taxes, but she was losing money. So it was just a matter of cutting our losses. Fortunately enough, at that time, we found one of the buyers who were still active during those periods, and they came in all cash. And it was, again, it was this serendipitous that we were just all kind of lined up. So, yeah, so I got to say maybe there was a higher power looking upon us to make that happen. Yeah. But it really helped get the ball moving. And then after that, you know, we were able to get Fannie Mae loans, and we used that. You know, because nobody else was really lending to two kids who had no idea, no experience. I mean, especially in 2009, you could imagine the challenges. I mean, they're asking me for, like I said, tax returns, financial. I'm a restaurant guy in New York City in my 20s. I mean, you know, this is tax. Yeah. I'm barely making rent.
So you picked up these new properties, right? You got out of the money losers. You picked up some new properties with Fannie loans. Were you doing commercial real estate sales at the time?
I was trying. So during the day, I was working at a commercial real estate brokerage in Manhattan. But if you say doing commercial real estate sales, that would entail that I was selling things, which was not the case. I was. They would lock me in the basement with a couple other guys, and it was really like, you know, we're doing cold calls. They say, okay, you got paid just 5 to 10, start calling, and we'd be doing cold calls. And the things I've heard from landlords, I mean, cursing me, telling me they're gonna kill me if they see me. You know, it definitely thickens your skin for sure. So I was surrounding myself with people, but I literally walked in as the market was crashing. So nobody was really doing deals. I wasn't doing deals. The one deal I did was I represented my mom when we sold it. I mean, that was the one thing. That was the extent of my commercial real estate, experience. It was a dire time. But I will tell you this, to kind of to that point, through that, one of the guys that was in the basement with me making those cold calls today is one of the most successful residential real estate brokers. He's sold, you know, exponential amount of properties to the celebrities, and he's a guy I'm going to be partnering up with. So it's just crazy how it works. It all comes back together, man.
Indeed, man. Indeed. Mm-hmm. It's also kind of crazy how like how predictable it is, you know, to make money in real estate. Like if you just you take pages 5 through 10 and then, you know, you call them, like it works from coast to coast at all different time frames. See, mm-hmm. you know, back then and still now.
Yeah, for sure. You know, not, like I said, it was an old, they even gave us a script of things to use. I'd imagine things have to have to change a little bit. I still get to get the cold calls. And, you know, from my experience, I try to give the guys at least a time of day and give them at least a couple of minutes of my time, because it was brutal. Brutal what some of these guys said. Yeah, for sure.
So that must have helped you learn. I mean, you sold your mom's property, and then when you went and bought more, you were already at least in the commercial real estate space, so you had some guidance there to help pick up the next set of properties, right?
Yeah, things just kind of fell into place after that. You know, like luckily we were in a 1031. I had a lawyer in my office, commercial real estate, who helped me out. And you know, I'm a firm believer, Trevor, that you have to maintain a positive outlook, and you have to look at things. Your thoughts are things, and you have to look at things in a situation of what you want the ultimate outcome to be. And I'm a byproduct of that. And by maintaining those positive thoughts and outlooks and actually pursuing them, putting a pursuit behind those thoughts and actions, things kind of fall into place. And that goes without saying. I've seen it happen time and time again. You see all the guys that we're striving to be like, or in this industry who are killing it, they all tell you the same story. I mean, you have to, you know, you got to put in the work, and the work is you have to maintain a positive mental attitude. You have to do meditations. You have to surround yourself with like-minded people, affirmations, things like that. As crazy as they sound, it works. And I've done them. And it was during that time that I started picking up on those things. And the universe was just presenting things to us one by one, one by one. And, you know, and now I'm in a place where I'm just so grateful for that. And I, you know, that, you know, we could sit here and talk about commercial real estate and what have you. But I think the message also needs to be the importance and strength of anything that you're pursuing is to maintain that outlook on things. Thoughts are real.
They are. I mean, 100%. You know, the future is a fantasy at the end of the day. It doesn't exist yet. It's not real. So you might as well believe in a good one. Right? You know, especially since, you know, your thoughts actually, you know, absolutely do guide your action and kind of, you know, guide you in the direction of what you believe this fantasy future is going to be. So yeah, make it an extraordinary one, and then it'll probably accidentally happen, you know. And I think you're right in that those you know, at least Napoleon Hill you know, was among the first to kind of identify that, and it's not new. It's been working for a long time, for sure.
Yeah, it's been working for a long time, for sure. And I you know, you always got to revisit those classics like Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, Chapter 4 particularly, that talks about auto-suggestion. It's those are things like that. You know, and then you also have to have a plan. And for us, it was just growing it slowly. You know, every 5 years we wanted to acquire a new property, which we have been doing. And we've been fortunate with those acquisitions that they've all turned out to be good acquisitions. And now we're entering into a whole new realm. I'm not saying we're going to be back to 2008. I mean, but you know, by no means. But it's going to be a whole new realm, and it's exciting if you position yourself correctly. So we're just going to wait and see the way things fall. But I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity coming up. So we're kind of licking our chops a little bit.
Yeah, especially in commercial, all those bridge loans come and due. Lots of opportunity. So you got a property 2008, multifamily. I take it right when you did that 1031.
Yeah, we got two. So we got one in Park Slope, Brooklyn, which is considered like prime Brooklyn. And then we got another one in Harlem. Those are two mixed-use properties. We worked those properties. You know, this is also while I was pursuing other things. I was in the restaurant world, became a partner in a restaurant. We opened restaurants. And needless to say, that's a lot of commitment and stuff. So I was living the restaurant world for almost 20 years. We were fortunate enough in that. It was super successful, not sustainable, especially when you get kids in the mix. But we were slowly growing the real estate portfolio while pursuing other things. My sister's an immigration attorney, and I was a restaurateur at the time. So since then, we've acquired two more properties, and I just closed on another property in the Hudson Valley of New York. So it's slowly happening, and it's time now, I think, to part of the reason how we met was through this Raise Masters mastermind group. And you know, I'm looking to scale it, and it's surrounding yourself with the right people. It's crazy what I'm sure you can attest to this, what you accomplish in such a short period of time when you're surrounded by resources that are there and like-minded people. It's like a shot of adrenaline in the arm every day.
Collapses timelines, man. It just takes years down to days in the extreme. Yeah, absolutely, man. And when you turn real estate into a team sport, right? When you start partnering with people that are really good at things that you're not, and you can compensate for their weaknesses too. Oh, it's such a beautiful thing, man. It's so cool.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. I would say, you know, I could relate it to in a restaurant when we were having in the middle of service, you know, if it all goes right and everyone does their part, it's like a beautiful dance, man. But if somebody's off, it's an absolute disaster. So it's all about finding that, you know, the synchronicity of just dancing and flow. It's the flow. And when everyone's in their flow, it's a special thing. It really is a special thing. You know, and, you know, you see other people achieving things. And, you know, it's easy to have resentment, but you can't use that as resentment, man. You got to use that as fuel. And it should actually be encouraging. Yes.
It should be, right? Yeah, yeah. It's so tough. And it's like, you need to be intentional to change your mindset like that, to not be upset at someone else's success. It's almost like kind of incredible how it seems like everyone's wired that way, and like how much work it takes to get past the caveman mindset and like into the abundance mentality, you know, and just be happy for everyone's success turn is next, you know. It's so crucial too.
But it's usually that distinction that we stop pursuing because we're like, we're never going to get there. And we fall just short. You know, you fall just short because, see, the other guy did it. He said, that can happen. So, you know, it's just, you got to change it. I'm working on it, man. I'm not saying I have, you know, I'm working on it. Every day you got to put in the work. You got to put in the time, man.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Are you journaling?
I journal, and I started journaling. You know, that would probably be my biggest challenge. I'm meditating. Journaling, I've been doing in the morning. Definitely trying to exercise for sure. And reading. Yeah. Those are like my four things that I try to do every day to some extent. Don't be fooled by my body. I try and exercise every day. Yeah.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you. Yeah. You know, I found, you know, journaling is like, because sometimes you go through highs and lows, right? Like you're never every day is incredible. Mindset. No one has that, right? So, but you know, it's like it's like just most days are at that like peak mental place. And then when it starts to slip for whatever reason is going on in life, I've just found like if I just like buckle down and just start journaling for several days in a row, it like brings me right back to where I need to be. And stays there for a while to where like I get up in the mindset that journaling put me in, and I don't even necessarily need it today. I'm just going to go attack this thing I want to attack, you know? So
it's a powerful tool. It's definitely a good tool to have in your tool belt. Absolutely. Yeah. You got to use it to your advantage for sure. One other thing that I would say, and then sorry to cut you off, but also that I've learned is just finding other people to help you. You know, it's, and you know, it's not the how, it's the who, and that's been preached to us. And I jumped in and I got a virtual assistant and things like that. And nice. It's just, it frees up that much more time, and you're just to focus on what it is that you're pursuing. It just makes life so much more sustainable. I mean, I still, right now I have a W-2 and I'm doing this, so it's, I needed that virtual assistant. So I would definitely suggest and recommend people to don't try and carry the whole burden yourself. You gotta delegate. I mean, it's, and then, mm-hmm. yeah, you have to invest in yourself, and for sure it will pay dividends.
Absolutely. Is this a virtual assistant full time for you?
Yeah.
Hey, nice.
Yeah. Yeah. You?
Yeah. I have half a dozen full time virtual assistants at this point, man. I have. As soon as I start doing something, and like I get like halfway through it and I'm like, I don't enjoy this, I immediately start looking for someone at this point. It's so powerful, right? Investing in people is the number one investment that you can make.
100%,
without a doubt.
100%.
You know? Yeah. And I got some local American, you know, team members as well for other stuff, you know, do outsource to the Philippines for some things and keep it on the US shores for others. But, everything has just been moving for me so much faster, and since I just embraced not trying to do it all, you know,
it's unbelievable, so. Huh? Yeah. So yeah, I mean, there's something to be said there. As you pick up these new things, and if it's not for you, just delegate it out, and then focus on that thing that you're great at. And look at you, you're growing exponentially at a rate that you probably never thought was even possible.
It's pretty nuts, man. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, and to like your point, honestly, man, it's because I joined the same community that you did. I last year, about the, you know, last quarter, second or third quarter of last year, and at that point, I was mostly a solopreneur, and you know, after just seeing the evidence all around me with all these other, you know, heavy hitters in the space that we're in, you know, syndicating real estate. It's like, well, you know, the success leaves clues, right? So I just started buckling down and investing in people, and it's just been paying dividends. So,
yeah, I mean, it's wise. You know, it's definitely a challenge at first for everyone, right? You got to get over these hurdles. But once you accept it and you go, I mean, I guess you have to do the things you fear. You have to put yourself in uncomfortable situations. I mean, case in point is getting on a podcast for some people. I mean, it's just something that it's not common, right? But it's you have to put in the work, whatever it may be. And by doing the thing that you fear, it's you don't fear it anymore. So it's
absolutely,
it's pretty cool.
Yes, sir. Absolutely, especially when it works out.
right.
So you've got four multifamily units now, mm-hmm. right? And I suspect you're probably sharing that, you know, it's kind of almost like a family thing. Is it at a point where you could stop your W-2 if you want?
No. I live, no, unfortunately not. I mean, I'm in wine sales. I've been in wine sales since the last 8 years. And that is, you know, I'm in the sales, I'm moving and shaking. That's my thing in New York. I do really great. I've been top sales in the country for the last 2 years, which is fantastic. But I'm looking to transition completely over to real estate. It's just, it's a grind. You know, I've been doing it for a bit. You got to go out and you're running around. It's a grind. It definitely takes its toll on you. No, I am not there yet. I mean, complete transparency, we use most of that to take care of our parents. You know, we have them in assisted sure. living facilities and things like that. And that's kind of like our nest egg. It's my sister and I. But the objective is to get there. I mean, we, fortunately enough, I'm in a situation with where my W-2 and my wife's W-2 enables us to pursue this. And also to not have to tap into those funds just yet. We'll just use those.
Yeah. Yeah. So to be clear, this real estate is paying for assisted living for your parents.
Yeah. Yeah. It's paying for assisted living and then some. So thank God we have it, because my wow. parents had nothing. I mean, they lost everything. Yeah. So when I say my parents, I mean my stepdad and my mom. They lost everything, man. And it was... fortunately enough, we're in a situation that we're able to take care of them, and that, you know, assisted living around here, and I imagine everywhere, is not cheap.
It is not.
So thank God we're okay, and that, you know, we're setting them up so that they're their golden years are going to be, they deserve it.
Yeah.
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 For sure.
No, that's the beautiful thing, man. You get to, the, you know, because otherwise you'd be strapped paying for the assisted living for them with your W-2 job, you know?
We would be strapped.
Like a lot of people are in that situation, and real estate is keeping you out of that situation. That's beautiful, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. I mean, that's why I'm pursuing real estate more. I think we could all say, you know, we've read Think and Grow Rich and things along those lines. I mean, it's a continual rat race with this W-2. I mean, it seems like the more money you make, the more you're paying in taxes and the less money you have. So yeah. It's just so smart, and it just makes so much more sense. And, you know, and you kick yourself like, oh, why have I waited so long? But yeah, the idea is to go ahead and pursue this thing full front, make the income, set myself up in a position where I don't have to worry about things like that, like getting up and going to make sales calls. It's tiresome. Do other things you want to do.
Real estate
is one of the few vehicles that enables you to do that, and it's magical. It really is. But it also could make you bankrupt in a second, so you got to know what you're doing. Because I saw
very easy to lose money.
I saw both sides of the coin. I lived on one side where bankruptcy was something, but I see the other side as well. And you just got to be smart. You got to be calculated for sure.
So you've got 15 years of turning problem real estate into real estate that can take care of people and then some, as you said, take care of your parents and then some. And I'm kind of surprised that you're just getting into the, you know, using other people's money version of this so that you can scale much more rapidly. But I'm glad you are now, man. I'm glad to hear that you're going down that road. So if someone, you sound like a quality operator. If someone wanted to work with you, if someone wanted to invest passively with you or just kind of get you on their radar, what's the best way for them to find you and reach out to you?
Yeah, sure. You can find me at frank@damroassets.com. That's damroassets.com. We also have a website. It's damroassets.com. Those will probably be your two best. And you can follow me on Instagram @damroassets.
Awesome, man. Awesome. I'm super excited to keep watching your journey, Frank, and super pumped for you, man.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you making the time, and I can say the same. And people like me look at people like you, and you're inspiration for us. So keep doing what you're doing, because I'm coming after you, and it's just exciting to see what you're doing, man.
I appreciate that, man. You know, and I don't. It's I would say, you know, one more thing, like that in the sales game, it's like that, right? Like it's like I'm coming after you. There's sharks everywhere, dude, coming after you. And like what I found in this, what's so like humbling and just fulfilling about this space that we're in now of you know, syndicating, it is just so not like that anymore. It's like, yeah, you see someone and that's a target, you want to get to where they're at, but like no one's taken from each other when that happens, right? I'm not taking wine sales from you or real estate sales from you. It's, if anything, there's probably more opportunity for us to work together than to be at odds or compete with each other, man. So it's so cool that that we're in that world now, you know, outside of that sharky sales world, and you're on your way out of it, you know.
100%. I'm swimming in both waters, but 100%. And you couldn't have said it better yourself, man. I mean, there's nothing more than you inspire me. So I would say I aspire to be like people like yourself. So, but in my world, in the sales side, yeah, it's cutthroat, and it's much better on the other side, man. Those are much better waters to swim in.
Cool. Well, man. Frank, man, appreciate you coming on, man. Telling your story, really do. And thanks for the humbling words. Much appreciated.
Yeah, man. Much appreciate you. Thanks for everything. Thanks for having me.